Hello, everyone. It's Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International, and it is January the 28th, 2016. So today we are going to talk about ethics and best practices in your as it relates, you know, specifically to sports. Maybe some of you have had training in ethics, you know, through other programs that you've done that are, you know, general to working with clients, and, you know, wanted to do some of that and also, you know, focus this one more specifically on, you know, issues that might come up working with athletes and in the sports arena too. And I welcome your questions and your, you know, any ethical dilemmas that you have and things that might come up, because this is a great place to talk about those for, you know, handling things and just feeling like you've got support. So, again, the main purpose for these calls, of course, is to answer your questions. So welcome your questions on this topic or any topics about coaching or business or marketing. And then we've always got our calls on the, you know, second and fourth Thursday of the month. So you could put on your calendars if you like. The next one would be on February the 11th, because that's the second Thursday, and then the one after that would be February the 25th, at this time 9 a.m. in the Pacific, and 12 noon Eastern. Yeah, so, oh, I heard a ding. Did someone else just join us?
Latalia.
Oh, Latalia, how are you?
Wonderful, how are you?
Oh, good, yeah, it's good to hear your voice. Yeah, so are you in the D.C. area? I forget.
Yes, I am.
Around there. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, do you want to, since you're, you know, fairly new, I know you've been in the program, but you know, new on some of these calls, do you want to introduce yourself? And we've got Daniel and Michelle as well. So, yeah, Latalia, do you want to say why you wanted to take the course and what your background is? Just a short little thing.
Sure. I'm Latalia Palmer. Hello, everyone. I live in the Maryland, D.C. area, and I just joined the program in December, and I'm really, really excited. Part of the reason that I wanted to join is that I've been fully immersed in the sports world with my three sons, and I've had an opportunity to just engage with coaches and athletes and my sons themselves, of course, and I was looking for a way to support them because I'm not an athlete, and so one of the best ways that I found to help them was through the mental training portion of it because I'm also a life coach, and so I wanted to be able to marry the sports world with what I'm doing so that I could be a more of a support to them and others who need the support and motivation.
Great, thanks, Latalia. Yeah, and
yes.
Daniel, do you want to introduce yourself to Latalia too?
Yes, Daniel Palanza, and I'm in Hyannis, Massachusetts. I'm a golf instructor. I have been for 14 years, and on a daily basis when I teach golf, I find that I don't have much problem working the physical aspect of the game. It's really helping people to understand the importance of a healthy mental approach. And so I was looking for some sort of program, and I found Dr. Joanne, and I signed up back in, I believe it was December as well. And I'm really excited about it because it's giving me a lot of insight, and it's already helped me with my lessons. So looking forward to getting through the program.
Great. Thank you, Daniel. And, Michelle, did someone else just join us too? I just heard a ding.
Hi, Dr. Joanne. It's Amy.
Oh, hi, Amy. Oh, good to have you. Yeah.
I'm actually on my way somewhere. I'm driving somewhere, so I'm going to have to hang up at 12:30 when I get where I'm going. But I just wanted to check in and say hello and be on for as long as I could.
Okay. Do you want to, since you're driving, do you want to quickly introduce yourself to Latalia, who just joined us too, from D.C.? She's from D.C.
Sure. I'm Amy. I live in Philadelphia. I hope you survived the snowstorm in Washington. My brother's there, and I know how long it's been without you.
Yeah.
It has been something. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. You have to walk around with a shovel, huh?
Yeah, that's
exactly.
So good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah, and
you.
Well, tell her what you do with athletes.
Sure. I am a certified life coach, and I did my certification with Dr. Joanne a couple years ago. So now I do a combination of life coaching and sports psychology coaching. I work with lots of different athletes, and I coach tennis at a private school, so it's been really nice for me to have the combination of the life coaching skills and the sports psychology program. I grew up as a competitive tennis player, so I love working with these teams and athletes.
Yeah, great, Amy. I know you're doing so much great work with them, too. Yeah, thanks. And also Daniel does golf. This is his specialty, right, at Cape Cod Golf School. So, great, thanks. And then Michelle, are you there? You want to introduce yourself?
I'm here. It's Michelle from Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And I completed your program about a year ago, I think. And working here, I have my own clinic, and I work with athletes in probably 12 different sports or so, and then also at a high performance center that's in our neighborhood with swimmers and tennis players. So yeah, that's what I'm up to, and also doing the odd workshop, which has been interesting.
Yeah, which sports? Can you mention some of the sports you work with?
Well, tennis and swimming, and surfing, fencing, hockey, soccer. I had a firefighter recently that competed at the World Games.
In what?
I have a
sport?
Paracyclist. He was mountain biking.
Oh, yeah.
I have a paracyclist, which I started working with just before Christmas, and he's trying to get to the next games in Rio. So that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, that's exciting. All right. Okay, we've got a great variety of sports. And Latalia, was it basketball you're interested in? Or working with one of your...
Yes.
Staff? Yeah.
A basketball.
Great. So, yeah, today we're going to talk about... Thanks for introducing yourself, everyone. We've got such a great variety. And the nice thing about mental training is that it applies to every sport. And so if you have questions about, today we're going to be talking about ethics and best practices. And this is a huge area, so, you know, we can talk about some of the things today and then go into a, you know, maybe part two next time, too. There's many different areas, so I just want to talk about first the best practices for coaching and maybe some of the coaching dilemmas that you might experienced, and maybe some of you have experienced. And feel free to jump in if you have a situation. You know, that's what the great about these calls. You can get support for whatever is coming up for you with your clients, and then talk about dual relationships. How you want to just have one relationship with the client, that one professional relationship. And how to have a real professional quality coaching practice, and then just knowing your confidence level, when to take on a client, when to not take on a client, setting good limits, and handling families with coaching, and then some things about, ethics and billing practice, that sort of thing, too. So, and Latalia, you asked some really good questions as well about, thank you for your email. You said, do you have sample templates of how you keep track of a client's goals and progress? So that's great. I'll put that in an email to everyone and up on the website, too, under tools and resources section there. I'll do that in the next couple days here, like a sample of that you know, basically asking the client how to, what went well this week and what didn't go well, and, you know, looking at long-term goals and short-term goals, that sort of thing. And then you ask about, let's see, what are some suggestions of getting started or getting first clients in this area? So, and then, that was a great question, too. And then your third question, do you have a sample of a peak client peak performance plan? So I'll put that in the email and on the website, too. But we can also talk about them here. A couple of suggestions for getting started, for getting clients is, speaking at organizations, if you can talk to different clubs, if you find out what events are going on in your area. I know in D.C. not much is going on because everybody's bogged down with the snow, but when things start up, finding out if there's, say track meets. Even if you aren't familiar with the sport, you can go and find out if there's track meets in your area or, say, with basketball games. Talk to coaches from programs, different athletic programs. And then also go back to in our, under the PECI private members area there, you can click on the yellow button schedule and page down, and there's a wealth of information there on marketing and getting clients as well in some of the past calls that we've had. And then just having, making up some business cards for yourself and just, on your, I think one of the best ways is just in the normal practice of your day when you're out doing things like with your kids, you see other parents that might be having problems with their issues with their kids, always have a business card with you. One really good resource for that, for getting easy, inexpensive business cards is vistaprint.com. It's V with a V like Victor, vistaprint.com, and you can go there and they have templates, simple templates you can set up and just, so you don't have to design a whole business card. You just fill in your information, pick the ones that you like, and then if you always have those cards with you, then, let's say you go to the gym. I've done that many times, go to the, gym where I work out, and then people will ask me, what do you do kind of thing for a living, and you can talk about, how you work with the mental performance side of things and then strike up a conversation and then, offer them a card, say, or you can go to my website or your Facebook page and whatever you would like or a way to contact you with your email and phone number and say you can offer them, a free consult, that sort of thing. So, there's lots of ways to do that. You could ask them for their card, and so you'd follow up with them. Always be ready with those sorts of things in the normal course of your day. If you have kids, you take them to school, you can talk with, the coaches there, the athletic department. Those are really good ways to get clients as well. For instance, I go out for my run here in the San Francisco Bay Area and park my car, and often there'll be other runners out in the same place, and afterward they're stretching at their car, and they'll be striking up a conversation with me about what I do and that sort of thing. And so just while I'm stretching, I'm not using any extra time. I'm just talking, can actually find people ask me about my services, and I can give them a card there. So, just one thing, I was wondering so we can get a good quality recording, and here's a little bit of background noise. If you could press *6 on your phone, that'll mute your phone, so that we can get a real good quality recording. And then if you want to ask a question later, just press *6 again to unmute the phone. That'll be great. Thank you. And what I wanted to – so that's one of your – to answer one of your questions, LaTalia, about, getting new clients, some different ways, and we can go over some more of that. So I just – let's dive into the – right now the ethics part of the training here, and just wanted to talk about different, you know, principles of, you know, ethical standards. And first of all, you know, you one really important area is boundaries of competence, you know, knowing what your competence level is. And I know all of us have different training and some different backgrounds, and some people here are, you know, are life coaches, some are athletic coaches, some of you are, you know, have a license as a psychologist. So, you know, there's different levels of training. And within this program, you know, we focus more on, you know, performance coaching for athletes. So that's a main area that you want to focus on with your athletes. And it's good to ask them, you know, if you and talk about what it is that you do with your coaching, and that you're focused mainly on the sports area. And if you find that there are other issues, deep-rooted, you know, mental health issues that maybe require, you know, more a licensed psychologist. If you're not a licensed psychologist, then it'd be good to, you know, have a referral source for that in your area, someone else that you could refer to there. But for the most part, I think we can all. You could also do, you know, often what you could do is you could continue coaching the athlete for the sports part, and then refer them to a psychologist or therapist for other issues that they might have, if they're, you know, have a deep depression or that kind of thing. So it's just good to, you know, kind of get your sense of the competency. I'll give you an example, too, of that, knowing, you know, what the limits are, because we, you know, you can see clients in your own home, you know, like I have my home office here. I work out of my home like a lot of people do, or you might have an office somewhere, see clients in person. Then you get a lot more of the, you know, you can really see the client. You can tell from their posture, their voice. You know, you actually know what you're dealing with that person. You can tell their mood much more readily, and that's a much better way to see the person, especially in the first session, so that you can assess what's going on. You know, sometimes if a client is across the country or in another country, then you might not be able to see them in person. And so, you know, you have to make a judgment about whether this is a good person to work with. And, for instance, I got an email from a 16-year-old girl, and she was in England, and she said that she had been swimming her whole life competitively. Her whole life, you know, she's 16 and she's ready to retire. I know it sounds ironic, but you know, athletes, of course, have a much different age scale. Sometimes you can get burned out really early. She's 16 or 17, and she just felt like she just, she said, without giving any warning, she told her coach one day that she was quitting coaching, and she didn't want to give her parents any warning and just told them one day she was quitting, and just felt like her life has lost meaning and wanted to wanted help. But in that email, I mean, it's, of course, you have to, when there's only words, you know, you're missing out on, it's difficult to tell where the person's at because you don't hear their voice, you don't see their face, and you don't get a sense of what's really going on. But I sense that this person's really in trouble and may be, you know, having a lot of risk for depression, and I didn't feel comfortable. If she's in England and I'm here, that's not somebody that I would want to take on as a client right now, because I think she needs more serious help with a local counselor or a psychologist. So in that case, I felt like my, you know, even though I am a licensed psychologist, I'm not going to do work with someone remotely in another country who is, you know, has a serious depression or may have suicidal thoughts, because they need somebody that's close by that would be beyond the limits of what I could do. So you could either choose, if you got an email like that, you could either choose not to respond or to say to them it would be better to seek help with someone in your own area close by. It sounds like you might need, real specific help on a one-to-one basis in person with someone, a licensed professional. So that's what I said to her there. I would advise, not to take on someone like that remotely who is, seems to be in real serious mental trouble, who's, far away. So that was a case where I chose to not take someone on there, and I think that can help protect you and your own profession, or help you protect yourself from getting into trouble. If something did happen, and you're in another country, you're not in a position to really be able to help that person right away, maybe as much. So it's good to know your boundaries of competence there. And then one area that I wanted to talk about as well was multiple relationships. It's important to, really be sensitive to the potential harm or unintended effects of social or other non-professional relationships that you have with a person. And so you might have a client, for instance. It's really important to just keep the client relationship very professional, and to only have one relationship with that client, just you as the performing edge coach, and they are the client, and that's the only thing that you want to do with them. I'm very careful to not have any other kind of relationship with clients, or not even a social relationship, because it hinders your objectivity in what the client's doing, and it keeps you from, it takes away from your professional distance that you need to have from that client. So, for instance, you might have a client that says, do you want to go out to lunch? I'd like to pick your brain on something. And I would say no. I would always decline that and say, we just have our sessions, within this 1 hour a week, and that's when we need to talk about, the issues that we're talking about here, and keep it just focused on helping that client to work on their own issues. Sometimes clients want to blur the lines and say, I love what you're doing in sports psychology. I'd like to learn from you and shadow you, or or chat about what you do so I could, maybe be an intern under you or something like that. And that's a whole other kind of relationship that I would not get into, while you're with seeing that client. And even, I'd say wait a year, 2 years later to do anything else, like training a client in something else. It's better just to stay away from it completely. And sometimes there might be an attraction if there's, that's something definitely to stay away from, is any sexual relationships, of course, with a client. There can be, very subtle kinds of attractions between if you're someone of the opposite sex. So it's really important if someone makes a funny joke or a comment, a sexual innuendo or something, it's really important to just to just move on and keep your conversations just to the issues that you're talking about, and not to get into, and not to even acknowledge the sexual stuff at all. That's rare that would happen, but it's good to be aware of that you want to keep your relationship just to that one thing. So I've had clients before say, wow, you know, I'm an author too. I really like what you're doing. Maybe we could do a book together. Maybe we could do a chapter together in something or write an article. And they want to take the, you know, relationship beyond just the therapeutic one. And I will always say, no, that's not appropriate. We need to just focus on what we're doing here. So that, you know, we can, so I can be of service to you. Because that blurs the lines when you get into other areas. Another question, thing that relates to this, another topic then, is like bartering with clients or patients. And that's a really, an example of having a multiple relationship with another client. And it may seem attractive, like it's, oh, gee, if someone could fix the, you know, my plumber says, oh, geez, you know, I can fix your sink in exchange for coaching or something. It sounds like, wow, I could get some free, you know, plumbing in exchange for my coaching services. And for other professions, that might work, but for our profession, because we're dealing with psychological issues and it just does not work at all, and it really you get into all kinds of problems with you know, what if they feel like you know, your work is worth $200 an hour and their work is, you know, $100 an hour, then they need to do 2 hours of work of their work for every one hour of your work. You know, it gets really blurry and like they're, you know, they're saying, you know, there can be lots of problems with that where they feel like, oh, your work's worth more than mine. And it's you know, it creates all kinds of other problems where you're not objective with the client. And all of a sudden they're having control over you because they're advising you about something, a different area. So I would be not get involved in bartering with a client at all. You need to keep it really clean and just have them give you, you know, pay you your fee in exchange for your services and keep it very objective and not to do any kind of bartering or other multiple relationships with other clients. Sometimes it can be very subtle things that clients want to do. And also I wanted to mention, so a third area with regard to this is with testimonials, getting testimonials from clients, and I'm, you know, I always think that that's a really good idea. But it's really important to keep the testimonial part separate from the work that you're doing. So you don't want to imply that you are saying, well, I'll do coaching for you for free in exchange for a testimonial. Because that's again, blurring the lines, and it's, you know, what if the work that you do with them, they're not happy with it, or they don't have good, you know, you did great work with them, but they didn't get good results in their sports, and they're maybe angry or frustrated, and they're not in a position, not in a good mood to be able to give a good testimonial. Well, that's okay. That's the risk that you know, that I would take or that you would take with a client. So I would never say to a client, I'll work with you for free in exchange for a testimonial, because that's putting too much pressure on the client, and it's you know, giving this dual relationship kind of thing again. It's always good to, it's okay to work with a client for free and pro bono, on a pro bono basis, especially, you know, if it's a high-level client, Olympian, someone that's, you know, has a lot of potential, and a lot of times these clients are very talented, but they don't have any income. Sometimes the more talented they are, the more, you know, they don't have sponsorship, that they don't have income to pay you, and it's fine to do pro bono work. But it's just that you want to not put any pressure on them to have to do anything for you. Then after after you've finished your work with them, or let's say they've gone to their national championship, and if they do well, then that's the appropriate time afterward to it's fine to say, I would like to, may I have a, would it be okay if I got, if we did a quotation from you on our work together? Sometimes it's better to call it a quotation or a quote than a testimonial. You know, that's what it is, but either word is okay. But just to say, to ask for that as something after you've finished treatment, but it's not a condition of it's not a condition of coaching. So just wanted to clarify that part. That, I mean, of course, when you work with someone for free, you hope that at the end you'll get a nice testimonial or something in exchange for that, or be able to use that. But you don't want to make it a condition of your coaching. Okay, so just wanted to clarify that part. That especially with athletes, especially since we're focusing on the sports arena here, specifically with regard to ethics. That athletes are under a lot of pressure. A lot of times, top athletes are under pressure to perform. They're under pressure from their coaches, from the media, from their parents, from their team, and so they don't want any further pressure from you as a mental training coach performance coach to have to do anything for them. Giving a testimony or something, especially while they're competing at a high level. But it's usually afterward that is the best time to ask for that. After they finish competing, and the pressures, not having as much of that pressure afterward. So you want to just be really careful about that, and then it's good to have them sign a agreement. I'll put that document too in the members area about sign a release that I give Dr. Dahlketter permission to use my name for this quotation, that kind of thing, so that you have something in writing that gives where they're giving you permission to use that testimonial, so that protects you and makes it real clear with the three of you or with the two of you. That is okay. So yeah, those are some key areas. Then I wanted to talk about. So we've got the multiple relationships and your boundaries of competence. Sort of covered some things in there. An introduction to each of these areas and the bartering and testimonials. And then I wanted to talk a little bit about it's really important to, with ethics and best practices, to be really clear about your fees and financial arrangements and how the sessions are set up and some of the things to talk about ahead of time. So one of the things that I wanted to mention, I have a coaching agreement, a sample one that I use. And this is something I'll email to you all as well and put in the members area. So it's an agreement. These things, I think it's good to talk about them verbally with the client ahead of time before you start your work with them, and then also to give them this a document that they look over and then just sign at the bottom. If it's someone under 18, then you can have both the client and the parent sign it. So some of the things you want to include in just in talking with the client are first the services to be provided. So you might say that for example, I say in my coaching agreement, Dr. Joanne Dahlketter will provide performing edge coaching or performance coaching to and blank, and then you would fill in that person's name to this client. Information exchanged during the coaching process will be confidential and not be disclosed to outside parties unless requested in writing by the client. So that's really important. And we'll talk more about confidentiality in another one of our today and in another one of our sessions too. Because confidentiality is really important, and it's important to the client to know that what you do say is confidential. And that's why I think it's really good to, what I do more of is just work, even if they're a person is part of a team, I'll work with individuals because they feel like, so that I'm not the team psychologist per se or not the team coach. It's okay to work with a whole team, but you need to be really careful about the confidentiality issue there, because they may feel like, oh, if you're working with the whole team, then how much information, you know, from one person are you disclosing to the rest? And you have to be really careful about what you say. And with groups, it's better to, you know, to give a talk, give workshops, that sort of thing. And also have a, you know, tell people within that group, if it's a small group, that, you know, what's said within this group stays within the group, and not the, people to not disclose things outside of that. So you want people to know that that it is that what you're saying in these sessions is completely confidential, and then let them know the limits to confidentiality, like, you know, if a person is a danger to themselves, you know, like suicidal or a danger to others, those are the only, the two situations where you'd need to, if you feel like they need help, then to report that to, you know, get them to a hospital or get them to some place where they would need to get the help that they need. So those are, but that rarely happens in our profession, but it's good to just let people know that. And then, and in some cases, I think it's really important to try to see the client in person if you feel like they are, you know, having real difficulties. For instance, I saw a client who's a top runner, 18-year-old girl, and she was had an eating disorder. It's anorexic, and actually, you know, with that particular area, since you might run into clients with that area, clients who have some sort of eating disorder, it can be a lot more serious than you might think, and you know, oftentimes clients use you know, restrict food. Or if they get stressed, they can relapse. I worked with one client who had been hospitalized for the anorexia, and then she was released from the hospital, and then I worked with her for several months, and she was in really good shape and doing much better. But then when she was going to go to school and to the university, getting close to that time, to start university, there were a lot of important decisions to be made. She got really stressed and was, I was seeing her first in office and then by phone during some sessions, and then she emailed me and said that she was starting to restrict food and was going to continue. It was losing weight and was going to continue to lose weight until, because she felt like she was too fat. Even though she's a very thin, you know, most of the time anorexic patients always feel like they're overweight or too fat, even if they're very underweight. So I wasn't able to, you know, on the phone you can't really tell if a person's losing weight, and so I insisted that she at that point come in and that I need to see her for each session. And also that she needed to see her doctor on a regular basis to monitor her medical condition and her weight. And I needed to be able to, you know, get a release to talk to the doctor about that. So, you know, if that's, and if you feel like a client's getting into an area where they're seriously, you know, there's medical serious conditions, then you want to make sure you refer them to a licensed professional that can deal with, say, that particular area. But I felt like I insisted that she come in to the sessions so I could monitor her and see what's going on, because over the phone you're getting some signs, but not you can't see the person's you know, facial expressions, and you don't get their whole energy level. So it's much better to have them come in to see you so that you can get, you know, have more control of what's going on, get a better assessment, and you can sometimes be more effective too. So that's a bit about the services provided, and then within the coaching agreement, you want to lay out what your coaching procedure is and the terms. So, for instance, I would say, you know, here's one example, and you can decide what your, you know, your terms would be, but it's good to be clear about what those are. If it's, you know, session-by-session basis, that's great. I prefer to do, like, 4 sessions a month. So I'll say there's 3-4 coaching sessions per month, 1 per week. And the coaching session to be done either over the phone or in office, whatever it is that you decide. And the client agrees to initiate the call, so to call me. So that's good to be clear whether the client's going to be calling you or whether you're going to be calling the client to lay that out. And then I would say something like, you know, it's better if you arrange your meetings on the same day each week at the same time. Oh, I think there's a little bit of background noise. If whoever has that, if you want to just press *6 on the phone, then that can mute the phone so we can just keep a get a real good clear recording for afterward. And then in a few moments, we can open up the lines and people, you can press *6 again if you need to ask a question. So, but I just want to finish up the coaching agreement part. So if we you know, and then so you could say the meetings, you know, our sessions will be held each, and then put a blank, you know, say each Tuesday from, and then I put a blank there where you fill in the time from, you know, 10 to 10 to 11 o'clock or whatever time it is. And then say, you know, if we agree to extend the call or additional calls during the month, that fee will be billed in the next invoice so that you protect yourself so the calls don't go on or the sessions don't go on for, you know, 2 hours when it's supposed to be 1 hour, that the client agrees that they're going to pay for the extra time, or that you're clear about that, whether you're going to bill for that or not. So it's good to tell them that in advance, and then tell them if you're delayed in calling in, I'll hold our call space for 15 minutes before I consider it a missed call, and if you call within the 15 minutes, we'll continue with the call and end at the scheduled time. And then so that you know, protect your own time. If you have a client after that, you want to make it clear that even if the client's late, that they still, you know, end at the scheduled time. So you're, and that trains the client, too, to call it the, that they should, that they'll be on time for you. And then it helps you to keep your schedule and keep good limits within yourself and your practice. And then you tell them how you're going to be billing is done in advance. Let's say I say by credit card or by check at the beginning of each 4 sessions. Please make the checks payable too, and then you put either your name or your business. So that's the way I do it. This is just an example, and you can. But it's important to lay out how they will pay you, and whether it's once a week for each session or once every 4 sessions. Much better to get paid in advance. I would never want to say, okay, you're going to do 4 sessions and then I'll bill you at the end of the month, because then you risk, you know, doing all this work and not getting paid at all. I think that's one of the advantages of our profession, is that you can get paid, you can set your own terms, you can call the shots. And so as long as you're clear about that and say it to them verbally and also in a document, and it's okay to email a coaching agreement to them, and then just have them email that, put their name and then email it back to you. And then just put a little section about changes. So, you know, sometimes clients need to reschedule an appointment, or if they don't show up, you want to protect yourself in those situations and make it clear. So I'll say something like to them, if you need to reschedule your call or your session, please ask that you please give me at least 24 hours notice, and we'll make arrangements to make up the call. And if you miss a meeting with less than 24 hours notice, I'll do my best to reschedule during that week. You know, always please give me 2 alternative times to reschedule, and then I'll do my best to reschedule that. So that's really important, I think, to keep the continuity of the sessions, to ask them, so sometimes clients will just cancel, but they don't give you an alternative time, and then it's, you know, playing phone tag. So this really helps if you tell them to let you know another time that they can meet. And that way you can just put that right in. It saves you a lot of time. And then you can say, if I cannot, reschedule, then you'll be billed for the next session, and missed appointments without notice are not rescheduled and billed in full. So that's what my policy is. You can decide. Sometimes people bill just half of a session if they're for a missed session. But you need to. It's really important to protect yourself so that you're not. If a client misses a session and then you don't bill for it, then what you're doing is training the client that it's okay to, you know, to flake out on you and not do a session, and they're likely to do that again and then get into the situation where you're being taken advantage of. And it's good to set limits so that they understand that your time is valuable and their time is too. And then one other thing you want to make clear to them, if you can tell them, you may email call in between our calls if you need to change the time, or if you have an emergency, you know, I'll say I do not bill for additional time of this type, but I do ask that the time be kept to 5 minutes, you know, if they have something quick they need to say. But if you need more time beyond 5 minutes, then we'll schedule an extra session. So you don't want to be in a position where a client's calling you all the time for, you know, asking you lots of questions or wanting additional time in between. Make it clear that you handle things during the session, and make that your, you know, specific time, and that you're not just, continually available to the client. That way you protect yourself, because you need that time yourself to, you know, you don't want to feel like you're on call 24 hours, 24/7 for one client. You want to, have that specific time in the session when you're available, and that's when you have that really focused time with that person. That way you can provide the best possible treatment for them. So that's an example of, some of the things you want to include in a coaching agreement, so that you, have all that, there, and you have that, and then you put an acceptance, I agree to these terms, and then just a client name and a date. So I just wanted to give you that information for now, and then next time we can talk about more. Let me ask you, I'm sure that you've probably got questions and, you know, different things that have come up with clients. So if you press star 6 to mute your phone, you can press star 6 again to unmute. And let me ask you, what kind of situations were you wondering about? What kind of stuff does this bring up for you? Anyone want to jump in?
Oh, hi, Dr. Joanne. It's Michelle.
Yeah, hi, Michelle.
Hi. I'm listening to this, and I have one client in particular where I've completely broken every rule in the book in terms of setting boundaries.
Well, it's good that you can say, here's a safe place you can say that, yeah.
Yeah, and they've just become the client from hell for me. And, you know, the mom calls me just melting down all the time, and, you know, they miss appointments, and everything you've said has happened with this client, and it's just left such a bad taste in my mouth. I love the kid. It's the parent that's the problem.
Yeah.
So, you know, I realize that I have completely facilitated this whole situation and allowed it to happen. So I appreciate, you know, your insights on this. Do you have a copy of this agreement in the members area that we could...
I just updated it, so it's not there right now. So I'll put that there, and I'll email it to everyone right away after this call.
I'd really appreciate that.
Yeah, but I guess you're asking too, how to dig yourself out of the hole. life isn't clean. Like we say, you know, it's great to set these things up, but then life happens, like you say.
Yeah, I know. I think, I have to just manage this situation. And then going forward with new clients, I have to be very clear in terms of the coaching agreement and my own boundaries and not enabling them, you know, for this type of behavior. So, Yeah, I think it's great going forward with this information. I think I've kind of lost the war with this other family. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, and it's what I think is important is when you're dealing with parents of a child, they're kind of thinking, oh, if there's something that happens, they can just call you and and chat, and that's separate from the session. But it's, you know, your time is valuable too. And if I've been in that situation before too, that's one reason I wrote this coaching agreement, is to try to protect myself and to help all of you to protect your time. Because I've found myself, you know, nightmares about a client or parents and ruminating about it, you know, losing sleep over it. If any of you have had that experience or thinking about it, spending way too much time thinking about one client, you think, oh, geez, this is time to do something about this, right?
Yeah, totally. And it's like, yeah, I like the sports psychology part of it, and I've allowed this to contaminate that process in a way.
Yeah. So I guess one thing is to say that, you know, these sessions are for, depending on what the age of the client is, what's the age of the kid, the person, the athlete?
He's 12, and he's on the junior national tennis team here. And, you know, he's one of the top three in Canada. He's a fantastic player, but there's all sorts of behavioral things going on with him and divorce in the family. And so the mom is just always on meltdown, and she texts me all the time. And because when I meet with this kid, we FaceTime, so she has my phone number. So I don't know how to handle these texts that are coming in all the time, and they're long. And, you know, I've asked her to send me just emails in the future.
Yeah, I think that would be good, just emails, because it's texts, it's okay for something short, to set up a session, but, you know, texting is not it's hard to read and it's hard to text back. It takes a lot of your time to, you know, it takes a lot more time to text it. And it also is not as as secure or private. You know, nothing in our, I mean, in the worst case, you know, nothing is private, because, you know, if there was ever a, you know, legal action or something, then attorneys can get a hold of anything, texts or emails or things. So it's really important to be careful with all of that, I think, and to delete, you know, after you get texts from clients, to delete them too, so that they're not you know, accessible from the outside somewhere. To say I don't only do this through. I mean, the best way is just to say phone. You know, if you need to change an appointment, just do a phone, a short phone message. But then I think it'd be clear with the parent that if you are, you know, if the parent is having difficulty being a sports parent, then that is billable time, and say we need to set, it looks like, you know, there's a lot going on here, and you could say to the parent, you could benefit from a session as how to be a sports parent and how to handle these issues with your child. And so say, let's set up a session for this time, and, you know, it'll be billed at the regular client rate, and set them up as a second client. So you've got, you know, that's what I've done with parents too, that they need to recognize that they're taking up your time, and that's all that needs to be handled within a session kind of thing, and that you're not available all the time for that client. Does that kind of make sense?
That would be a good session for you to do with us, Dr. Joanne. How to coach the parents. That would be a great session for our teleconference call. A good topic to how to coach the parents. Because I'm finding my tennis players, they're the most challenging, the parents, of any of the sports.
Yeah, they've got I know, I just saw a new client last week, a 14-year-old boy basketball player, and his parents came in too. And it became clear that the parents were yeah, way too overbearing, and every time the athlete would make a mistake out on the basketball court, the father would just shake his head, you know, very, you know, down low, where the client, you know, the kid could see his father, you know, shaking his head and, you know, and rolling his eyes and all that stuff, and it would affect his performance. And I finally said, I kind of made a joke, but I said in the session here, I said to the kid, see, I said, you see, what we're really here for is to fix your parents.
Yeah.
And they laughed, you know. But I said, this is, you know, it's just to say that everyone has a part in this. Kind of not to point, because obviously it's a dilemma for all of us, because the parents are paying the bill, as you know, and so if you want to get paid, but also point out that they are a big part of the issue too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's good. Yeah, we could do that maybe at our next session here too. Did I hear Daniel or someone else say something too?
This is Dave McIntyre. I called in while you were talking.
Oh, good. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Michelle. Hi, everybody. How are you?
Good, yeah. Did you have a question or a comment?
Oh, I just ran into a conflict with a parent recently. I had an initial 8-session deal with a baseball player, and it's funny, depending on which parent you talk to, I was either like the most brilliant person or the dumbest. As far as, you know, producing an outcome for the son, and it's kind of
that you were the most brilliant, or they were.
I was that, you know, like the father is seeing a lot of improvements and everything like that, and the kid's is more successful as far as batting numbers like that, and then but the mother was kind of less so, and I basically had to, you know, kind of pull the parents together, and you know, because I was kind of getting pushback from the mother, and then I was getting kudos from the dad. And so we had to kind of do a separate session before they wanted to continue. And I said, I can't continue if it's going to be contentious type of thing. We kind of had to work out some guidelines type of stuff. And, you know, I'm being the shrink in the, you know, kind of, you know, you kind of saw that playing out. But anyway, so I think some of it had to do with money, but more of it, that's how it was presented initially, but then it seemed to turn into more of the some other dynamics going on. So money sometimes will kind of be the issue, and sometimes it'll just be what people complain about when really there's other stuff happening.
That's a great thing. Thanks for sharing that, Dave. And you said you had to set up some guidelines. Can you give an example? What kind of guidelines?
We just, as far as, you know, if they had issues with me, they needed to speak with me directly, not the kid. Because, you know, the kid's a high school kid, and he was kind of getting confused as to, you know, that was getting in the way of the work he and I were doing. Like, we were good on what we were doing, but then there would be this white noise from the parents, or from the mother mainly, that, are you sure that's what you should do? Because, you know, Dr. McIntyre, so-and-so, and so it felt like she's kind of submarining some of the work, like getting in the way of it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we just said, you know, that they can do whatever they want, or they can stop working with me, but if we're going to work together, then I need them to basically focus on, you know, being neutral to positive with their kid when it comes to the work we're doing. And if they have issues, then they need to, you know, the couple needs to bring it to me, you know, and, you know, so kind of putting it out there where, you know, it's not supposed to go to the kid first. If they have issues with me, they either have to eat it or have to bring it up to me. And so, you know, and it's kind of worked. And there was a couple of times where we'd have a quick call, and so ultimately both parents wanted this to work, so that was good. But the mother was kind of, if you want to psychodynamic this a bit, the mother was just, by the work this kid is doing with me, it was kind of taking precedence over some of the work she was doing with him, and she didn't like that change in the relationship because he was being less needy to her.
Uh-huh.
And that she didn't really dig that.
Right.
So anyway.
Yeah, well, so yeah, it's so great. You're seeing all those kind of family dynamics coming out.
Yeah. Yeah, they sure spill out, don't they?
Yeah, and that so there's a control issue. It sounds like, yeah, the mom was wanting to control things. Yeah, and didn't want you to be. But, yeah, so there's all, and then you wonder, well, you think and I've been in this situation too, just like that, where I thought we were doing, yeah, performance coaching for the kid here, and that, but it's turning into family therapy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is different, and I've actually done some. We'll talk to the lawyers about this, attorneys, and in our professionals, of course, as a psychologist, there's the APA, American Psychological Association for the rest of you, and there's also, if any of you are, well, in California, they're called MFTs, Marriage Family Therapists. There's, you know, if you join one of those organizations, then you can talk to lawyers within the organization that give you that are in the APA. It's well within the insurance. If you have insurance under them, you can talk to people who are actually an attorney, and they're also a psychologist, which is really great. Can see the, you know, therapeutic point of view and the legal point of view in different things. So I've talked to them about these kind of issues too, and there's two kinds of things. There's two ways to do sessions. You can be basically working with the individual. You're doing individual therapy, and then and the parents are sort of adjunct or supportive to that. And that's the best way to do, the cleanest way to do these kinds of sessions, where that you're focused on the child and the parents are just an adjunct or supportive to that. And there's a second kind of session where it's actually family therapy, and that's a different kind of session where everybody is involved, and you're coaching, you're working with each person, and their own issues individually and with the group, and that's more complicated. And I know that it's hard to define those lines between those two things, but it's legally and ethically it's different, and so it's we're in a family therapy situation. Nothing is there's no secrets, or you need to agree. It's most of the time people agree that there's no secrets or no outside sharing, but everything's shared just within the family session. So I would advise you not to do the family therapy, everybody, and unless you are, certified as a family therapist, or unless that's your specialty and you want to do that. I don't know, Dave, do you do both, individual or family therapy? Oh, I'm not sure if he's still there. Or maybe he left the line.
I was on mute. Yeah, these are all, I wouldn't do both. They're either performance psychology clients or they're therapy clients, and they, get engaged in both of those.
Yeah, so I think you did the right thing. It sounds like it gets sticky, and it's not, it gets complicated sometimes, and it's really good to, if you see it, use your gut like you were doing, and feel like if you're feeling like it's contentious and that all these kind of competing issues are coming up with the mom and dad, then it's good to suggest, hey, let's do a private session with just mom and dad on the phone or in person, and work out some of these things, how to and focus it on how they can best support the child, as opposed to if you feel like you're getting into divorce issues or couple therapy, then that's a whole other thing that you could, if you're that's one of your specialties, then you'd do that with them too. But I think you're right. If you feel like the parents are not on the same page, then it's good to just work with the parents. In a way, it's a good thing, because then you can separate the two out and work with the child and then work with the parents. I'm so glad you brought up that example, Dave. That was great. It's an example of what really goes on with parents. And so if you can, if you're doing performance coaching, like that's what we're focusing on here in the in this program, then it's good to try to, even though these other issues come up with the parents, to try to keep things focused on, you know, how can we work best to support the child. And also it's good to ask, you know, if you have all three, the parents and the child in a session, to ask the child what, you know, what do you think? Because sometimes the child isn't even allowed to speak because the parents are so loud. But ask the child what, you know, do you agree with your mom? Do you agree with your dad? It's okay to disagree, and let the child have a voice, because a lot of times kids don't feel like they have a voice, and they act out in other ways, or don't have a lot of pressure, don't perform well in sports because of the frustrations within the family. So here's a place where you can have the child speak out, and you know, like this family I just worked with last week with a 14-year-old basketball player, and his kids were there. I asked the child, the parents kept wanting to speak for the kid, and I kept saying, "No, I want you to, you know, express your own feelings. What do you think?" And he was saying, after he would say things, the dad and mom said, "Wow, I've never heard that before. I've never known that about you." And they were learning brand new things that because the child had never been allowed to express themselves in that group. And I asked him, you know, I asked the child, how could your parents help you in your, you know, perform better in your sport? And the child said to the dad, because the dad was actually coaching him too, said, Dad, if you could tell me what you think I should do out there on the court instead of just shaking your head, shaking your head back and forth and saying no, you know, be specific about what I should do, because the dad was knowledgeable in basketball. And the dad said, "Wow, I never heard that. That's a good idea, you know. We have to figure out some kind of signaling system," because the dad is, you know, actually coaching the child informally too, and wanted to be able to tell him what to do even in the game, signal him in some way. But signal him in a positive way. Here's what to do, rather than just shaking his head. So that was really a benefit of that session, to give the child a voice and let them, often you have to interrupt the parents and let the child speak. And I gave the dad, here's another example of that, where I gave the dad there something to do. I said, instead of just shaking your head when the kid does something wrong, you probably got all kinds of stuff going through your mind. He's super analytical, super detail-oriented. So I said, take a piece of paper or your iPad or whatever you put notes on, and it would be better to, instead of shaking your head, to write down the notes. This play, here's what we need to work on. Work on this, improvement needed here, and write down your thoughts during the game so that you're processing that. You have a place to do that. And then the mother said, she says, you know, yeah, we're both so frustrated. Maybe we could vent together. And that was, what a concept. Oh, my God. The parents sitting in the stands there, she said, yeah, we're both frustrated feeling bad when he makes a bad play. So we could vent together, you know, just talk to each other about our, you know, how it's going, instead of, you know, projecting negative stuff onto the kid, instead of shaking our heads where the kid could see that. So that was a positive kind of suggestion that I made to them, if they could, how they could be supportive to the child. So, yeah, thanks, Dave. Anything else you wanted to add?
Oh, no. I appreciate you being here.
Yeah, thanks. This is great stuff. Yeah, we got the parent. So we can do more on the parents. I don't know, LaTalia, are you still there? Or Daniel, do you want to have any questions or anything that's comments or things that are helpful? I don't know if they're still there or not. But you can just press *6 to unmute your phone.
Dr. Joanne?
Yeah, hi, Daniel.
Hi. I actually had to take a break to eat lunch.
Okay.
Because it is that time on the East Coast. Comment on what Michelle and Dave was talking about. It seems like we have to be really careful to ensure that the parents understand their role as parents, that the kid has a basketball coach, that he has a mental, you know, performance coach. And if they're going to be a coach, they have to define their role going in.
Yeah.
In other words, you know what I'm saying? I mean, maybe dad was a Division I star, so he has, you know, experience. So it's one of those things that I think defining the roles. And I find sometimes I've had times when parents have been present in lessons, and because I haven't really been coaching. I'm learning to coach now through you folks better. And when I've had a parent present who literally I've gone silent and just let him verbalize, and then he realized he's paying me to do work, but he's actually taking over. So basically I kind of, you know, I step back and let him come to the realization that he's in my space. And I think that's something that, you know, and when Michelle was talking, I think, you know, she said there was, you know, become an athlete from hell, but the kid's a really good performer. If she has a good relationship with the kid, I don't think she has any problem just saying point blank, hey, you know what, we need to sit down and get back on track. Right now this train is way derailed. And just reel it back in. And if they say, no, we don't like your terms, because she's got an agreement now and she wants to focus on certain specific things, then, you know, maybe she loses the client, but at least she has her dignity and her integrity, and she walks away and she's prepared for the next one. I don't know. I'm not saying you drop the client, but I'm saying, you know, sometimes you have to stand up and say, wait a second, this is not what I signed on for.
Exactly. And,
the nicest of way, you know, where everything's off by tact. The other thing that I wanted, and that's all I had to say about that, but what I did want to ask about is, I have liability insurance to teach golf, and I'm probably covered for coaching someone in golf, but is there another liability insurance I would need for what, you know, for the mental aspect of coaching? You know, doesn't necessarily fall in if I went to another athlete? And I was wondering if there was something that, you know, you recommended or you were aware of. I used to use National Healthcare, were they NHPSO, Healthcare Provider Service Organization, I think it was HPSO, but I didn't know if there was something you'd recommend.
Yeah, that's a good question. Currently, the best thing is to, whatever training that you have had to get, you know, seek liability. If you want insurance, seek that under whatever association where your training is. So I know it's different for each person, because I'm a licensed psychologist. I know Dave is, and John Cannon in this group. There's a couple of people that are psychologists. There's certain insurance that only psychologists can get, and there's other. For life coaches, there's other kinds of insurance as well. And so the best thing would be to, for me to, that's a really good question, and it's kind of a broader question. So why don't we, I'm going to do more research on that so that I get all the right, you know, the best answers for you, and then I'll... we can talk about that on our next call. That's on the 11th of February. And, you know, if you're a MFT, say in California, Marriage Family Therapist, there's this program called CAFT, California Association of Marriage Family Therapists. That would be the appropriate place if you're a therapist in California. So it depends on what your background is. There, as I understand, I don't know of a specific one for sports psychology currently, and but I want to make sure that I'm up to date on that. So I'll do my research this week, and so I get the best you know, update date information for you, if that's okay. So and like you say, if you're in golf, you know, if you have liability insurance for that to teach golf, then that's great. You're covered for that. Fortunately, in our profession, there's not that we don't have a lot of you know, legal issues, so it's not as much of an issue. I would say it's better not to. Some of the times, the people that get have more problems or more issues, or if you're supervising an intern or something, that can get a little tricky. So it's best if you just work. It's better just to work with clients and not supervise interns for things, because that's more of a. There can be some issues there sometimes. So sorry. So if that, I hope that helps a little bit. But I'll go do my research and get back to you on that, if that's okay, Daniel.
Yes, that's great.
Yeah, thanks. And I'll And also, let's see. I don't know if just wanted to ask. So thank you for the question and thanks for your comments on that. Yeah, you're right. It's sometimes it's important to define the role. Sometimes parents, to speak to that first part that you said, if. Sometimes a parent is just the parent only, and sometimes they're parent slash coach, where they, in this case, like the family I just saw, the kid has his own coach at school for basketball, but the dad is also very knowledgeable in basketball, and I asked the child, how is that having your dad coaching you? And I wanted to give the child a chance to say his opinion about that, and the child said. Well, the main reason I'm at where I am, as good as I am today, is because of my dad and his coaching. So, that was amazing. It was important to hear that the child acknowledged that his father is really helping him with coaching. But he also said, Dad, I wish you would, just tell me what to do and not do so much of the negative stuff only focusing on the mistakes. But the father is from Czechoslovakia and was a top swimmer there. And Czechoslovakia, the coaches, are very strict and only focus on negative feedback most of the time. So that's where the father's coming from. And but the father was willing to change, I think, a little bit. So, and the father agreed in that session to try to avoid shaking his head during the games. And to just write down his thoughts and then process afterwards. So we got some agreement on that. So it's good to. But defining the roles is important. If a parent chooses is knowledgeable and is a good coach, wants to coach the kid, I can't change that. Then there's two roles. But it's just good to define what those roles are and realize and let the parents know that it makes it a little trickier when you've got a parent who's trying to be a parent and also a coach. And you have to be able to not be so hard on your child. Also, be really supportive. There's all different kinds of roles that parents play, and sometimes they get there's frustrations there. Sometimes they sometimes there's conflicts between their own coaching of the kid and then the official coach. Say one thing that I'll put these documents in the members area under tools and resources that I mentioned, and then I'll also email them to you. Oh, is that Amy? Oh, I thought I heard a voice somewhere. Oh, maybe it's just an echo of my voice. but if you could each say, anyone that's still on the call, just anything that what was most helpful for you today or what you'd like to continue with next time. Okay. Well, thank you, everyone. And maybe you might be on mute there. Just wanted to thank everyone for the for your participation today. It's always an honor to work with you. Oh, is that someone there?
That's me, Doug.
Oh, Daniel? Yeah.
Still working on my lunch. I apologize.
Okay.
That's what happens when the call comes at 12 o'clock and I postpone lunch until after.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Well, thank you so much for your comments, all of you, Michelle and Daniel and Dave and Latalia and Michelle and Amy. It's great to have all you fantastic calls.
Your distributed conference is now split into several sub-conferences due to a communication failure. It will be reconnected automatically if the problem is resolved.
Okay, I'm not sure. I think there's, we've run out of time with the recording time here. So I'll just finish up the call. Thank you all for joining us.
Thanks, Dr. Joanne.
Okay, thank you so much, Daniel. And I'll be on the call, and I'll send out those documents and rejoin you on our next call on February 11th. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye now.